I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation Cure Master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at SurreyFarms.com or VirginiaTraditions.com.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. Our show today has been sponsored by Edwards, purveyors or makers of delicious cured Virginia hams. And our show today is being produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. If you have questions for us, please do email them to the station at info@heritageradionetwork.com. And feel free to contribute to the Cutting the Curd discussion on the Heritage Twitter feed, which is at hrnupdates.com. If you have comments about our show or questions or want to add anything, please feel free to make your contributions. Today we are continuing our State of Cheese series with New Hampshire, which I'm very excited about. The sort of neighbor to Vermont, less well known cheese state than Vermont, but making some great strides in the cheese industry. And here with me today is Doug Erb of Landaff Creamery. Doug, are you with us?
I'm here.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Very good. Thank you for taking time out of your Sunday, and I hear time out of the Patriots game. That's a pretty big commitment.
They haven't played a good first half, so I'm better off on the radio, I guess.
This is a welcome escape. I'm not the hugest football connoisseur, but Tom Brady, is that the quarterback?
That's right.
Is it true that he's the prettiest man in football?
I can't be the judge of that.
We'd have to ask your wife, Debbie.
Yeah, sorry.
All right. Well, so that's one frivolous thing out of the way. The other thing is daylight savings time. Today is the first day of daylight savings time. And, you know, how do farmers feel about daylight savings time? Is this really something that you look forward to? I mean, having to get up so early and milk the cows?
We think it's a value up here. I just don't like seeing the school bus go through in the dark in the morning.
Yeah,
and that's the reason behind it is safety for the school kids, and it's something we've always dealt with, and it isn't a problem.
Oh, that's great. No, it's so funny. I'd always heard of it more in terms of a benefit to farmers because, you know, it makes the day kind of more in tune with, you know, with farming practices, getting up with the sun and all that. I didn't know that there was a school component to it as well.
We get up before the sun and we go to bed after the sun anyway.
That's true. Okay. Point taken. I always say that, you know, farmers work the hardest of anybody, followed by chefs and then followed by everybody else. There's kind of a sliding scale there. I wanted to ask you first about your farm. Can you tell us a little bit about your farm and how you guys got into cheese making?
Yeah. We're located in northern New Hampshire. We're actually, most of our farming goes on along the Amonoosuc River Valley. The Amonoosuc River actually starts at the Lake of the Clouds up on Mount Washington.
Okay.
And comes down through the granite stones of New Hampshire, and we feel that's one of the reasons why our cheese has a little bit of a unique flavor. We're about an 80-cow dairy. My dad bought the dairy in 1952. Started down the road to expansion in 91 when when the dairy industry started showing signs of some weakness. We kind of ran out of land and went back to the 80 cow size, and we've been pretty successful at that until about 2006, when the dairy industry showed further sign of weakness and herds started to grow all over the country, and decided that we needed to develop a value-added portion. We visited a lot of different operations, had some really fascinating visits with people in cheese shops, and decided that we'd like to try cheese of some sort. And we were kind of floundering in the dark trying to figure out what to do, and my wife Googled the town of Llandaff, and it came up with Llandaff Wales, and found out that in that area there was a Caerphilly-style cheese that was made. Huh. So we started studying that cheese and found that it would fit good with our milk and with our operation.
Now,
and,
what kind of...
started taking classes. The first class we took was with Peter Dixon. Then we went on to take classes at VIAC at UVM. And somewhere during the process, we got in... introduced to Mateo Keeler at Jasper Hill, and so here we are.
And so, first of all, I'm wondering. Have you been able to go to Wales yet to actually see how those traditional Caerphilly cheeses are made? And if not, do you have plans to go?
I was able to go. I went in 2008. We took the classes at VIAC, and then Mateo and Andy hooked us up with Chris Duckett and Jemima Cordell in Somerset, England, where they made a traditional Caerphilly, and I was able to go over and study under them. And that's one of the things that put us on the road to where we are with this cheese.
Absolutely.
They were very open with what they do and how they do it, and it was a tremendous experience.
And how long did you stay with them, with the Ducketts?
I was there for a little under a week. We made cheese 3 days, and then I went into London and toured Neil's yard and got a chance to learn a little bit about the farmstead cheese businesses in England.
Now, what would you say would be the difference for you between taking classes at a place like VIAC, which for our listeners who don't know it, is the Vermont Institute of Artisan Cheese, versus working on a farm and actually observing the cheese being made firsthand?
Well, I think the two, it's kind of like a 1-2 punch. The VIAC gives you the science behind it, and the theory and understanding the interrelationships, and then actually being on the farm and making it gives you a feel for it and gives you some specifics on different procedures. The two work very well. It would be hard to do one without the other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel like having that dual experience is really important, because a lot of people get one experience or the other, but having them in tandem would definitely make for a better cheese. So, well, Llandaff is obvious. It's an amazing, delicious cheese. It's a raw cow's milk cheese. I think it's generally aged between 4 and 5 months. Isn't that right?
Yes.
Up at Jasper Hill. And so, can you tell us a little bit more about your relationship with Jasper Hill and how you guys work together on Llandaff?
Well, we kind of break the farmstead cheese business into four businesses. One is making the milk, the dairy, doing a good job with the cows. The second is taking the raw milk and creating the cheese with it. The third is is aging the cheese, which is a whole separate science from the production of the cheese, and then the marketing and distribution is a whole other business in addition to the. So by creating a relationship with Jasper Hell, we make the cheese and ship it over to them as green cheese, and then they do the aging and they do the marketing and distribution. So we had to learn, we already knew how to make the milk. We had to learn the cheese-making aspect of it, and then we turn it over to them for the aging and for the marketing and distribution. All four of those parts have different skill sets, and to adequately market a product is a skill set in itself. And we didn't feel that we had the know-how and the skill to go out and market a product. By partnering with Jasper Hill, they already have some great, great products in the Cabot Cloth Bound, and their Jasper Hill products and the Oma from the Von Trapp family. And so they walk into a customer, and they have a lot more to offer than if we were to go to New York City and carry our one cheese around and try to get people's valuable time in buying our product.
I think that's so smart. I mean, there are efficiencies and sort of symbiotic things in many ways, but not only is it, from my end, is it easier for me because all of the cheeses that are aged at the cellars at Jasper Hill are sent down to my store on a refrigerated truck as opposed to coming in via FedEx in 10 different boxes with 10 different problems, as they usually tend to come from FedEx. But then also, you know, I think it's very smart to realize that there are four businesses, which are four full-time jobs, you know, associated with farmstead cheesemaking, many more, actually, if you consider, you know, maintenance of the pasture and everything else. So I think that the way you guys approached your business is amazing and pretty, it's a great model for those who are thinking of getting into farmstead cheesemaking. I actually think it's time for us to take a very quick break, but when we come back, I have a couple more questions about your farm, and then I'd love to hear about other cheesemakers working in the state of New Hampshire. Stay with us.
Here she comes. You better watch your step. She's gone to into it's true. It's not hard to realize. Just look into her false colored eyes. She'll build you up to just put you down. What a clown, 'cause everybody knows the thing she does to please. Just a little tease. See the way she walks. Hear the way she talks. You're written in her book. You're number 37. Have a look.
And we're back on Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. If you have questions or comments for us about the show, please send us an email to info@heritageradionetwork.com, or you can comment on the Twitter feed at HRNUpdates. My guest today is Doug Erb, owner of Landaff Creamery, and we are talking about the state of cheese in New Hampshire. Doug, what's the deal? New Hampshire and Vermont, right next to each other. Why are there so many dairy farms in Vermont? Why do we hear so much about cheese in Vermont and not hear so much about cheese in New Hampshire?
It all has to do with the land, Anne.
Okay.
New Hampshire is actually about 85% forested. A lot of the land in the state of New Hampshire is not suitable for dairy farming. nothing compared. We have no Champlain Valley. We haven't got the beautiful open fields that they have in the Hardwick area. There will never be. We traditional dairy farms where Vermont is over 1,000. We're about 130 dairy farms.
Wow.
Most of it is concentrated in the Connecticut River Valley and in the Merrimack River Valley. So we'll never have the dairy industry just because of the land that Vermont does.
But isn't it true that Vermont was close to being completely forested at one point, and then they cleared a lot of it for farmland, and now it might be, you know, there's more forest than there used to be, obviously, because there aren't as many farms. But New Hampshire, you're just saying New Hampshire soil and the lay of the land isn't as well suited to dairy farming.
Right.
Okay. Well, and you said you guys are in a river valley. What's the lay of the land like on your farm?
It's a very narrow valley. It isn't even a half a mile wide. It's kind of a sandy loam. Where the actual farmstead sits, our farm name is Springvale Farms.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of wet land. Actual tillable land in the old farmstead is only about 55, and we rent about 100 acres that's owned by other people up in the river valley. So we actually there's us and one other farm right in this small valley, and between the two of us, we use all the land there is available. Paul Collins milks about 120 cows, and we milk about 80 cows, and that's all that this little valley can sustain.
Wow. So how much land would you say does it take for, how much land does one cow need?
Somewhere between 2 and 3 acres.
Okay.
It depends on whether you're pasturing or growing corn or your ability to grow high-yield corn. So it's between 2 and 3. About six tons of dry matter to feed a cow for a year.
Wow, that's a lot of food.
Yeah, it
yeah.
Sure is.
And so you guys with a shorter growing season, what is your feed like for your animals?
Well, we put up some corn silage. We feed about 60% corn silage, 40% haylage, which is a combination of local grasses that grow around here, so a little bit of alfalfa, but not much. And then we buy all of our concentrates in and through Cargill. And the concentrates are about 40% of the total diet, and the forages are about 60% of the diet.
Okay. And concentrates, that's a term I'm not quite as familiar with. Could you tell me what that is? Is that more fat, more protein for the animals?
Yeah, it would be more protein and more energy. Energy for milk production is it's very tough to get all that the cows will genetically handle out of just forages.
Mm-hmm.
So we give them some it's a mix of corn and soybeans and hulls and different concentrated that would have a lot higher percentages of the protein and the energy in it.
And so, when you're dealing with cheese milk, what kind of butter fat are you guys looking at?
We're running right now about 4%.
Okay.
We average, it'll drop down when the cows go on to pasture in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
Because the protein's so much higher in the early grasses. But we're between 3.8 and 4% most of the time.
And you guys are you milking Holsteins?
Holsteins, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And the 4%'s pretty good for a Holstein herd.
Yeah.
It's something that we've bred genetically, and we don't push our cows real hard. We don't feed additives. We just feed a very simple diet, and we keep the forages as high as we can and try to keep our cows healthy.
Well, you can tell, just like you said, your milk is ideally suited to the style of cheese because the flavors that come out in that Landaff are so wonderful.
Thank you.
Well, I was wondering, could you tell me? I was talking with your wife just for a second yesterday, and could you tell me a little bit about some of the other cheesemakers in New Hampshire? How many are there, and are they all milking cows, or are some doing sheep and goat cheeses?
There's about 11 of us. Just down the road is Roby Farms.
Mm-hmm.
They're in Piedmont. They make a variety of cheeses. They make a very good product. And then Boggy Meadow Farm makes a Baby Gouda, and they're down in Walpole.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably one of the guys we had the most fun with when we were touring local cheese places is a guy by the name of Tom Merriman that's down at Sandwich Creamery.
Mm-hmm.
And he buys milk in and he makes a variety of products, real high quality products, and he makes an ice cream. And
the famous ice cream. I've heard of that.
Hmm?
I said the famous ice cream. I've heard of that.
Yeah, he's not too far from Conway, but he's way down in kind of a backwoods hole. And he's made it an adventure just to find his place. And we had a really good talk. He was very helpful in helping us understand the dynamics of the business side of it.
Mm-hmm.
He worked 10 years to get his operation to the point where it would sustain him and his family, and discussed a lot of the problems that he went through, but he does a real nice job.
And now, so that's an important thing, because the transition from milking cows and selling milk, to a large company versus making cheese is a whole different business setup. With the setup that you guys have going now, is the farm with the 80 cows, is that a profitable operation for you guys?
We're starting to get our nose above water, let's put it this way. We made our first batch in January 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And we've learned a lot about running the two businesses simultaneously. And we're still trying to find that proper balance between running two operations. We aren't quite there yet, but we're gaining the cheese seems to be going better and better, and so I'm very encouraged about 2011, and it's given us something to really look forward to and some control over our own destiny, too.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, on my end, people absolutely love Landaff. All of my customers, be they retail customers or chefs, I think it's an incredibly versatile cheese, and it has, we're just selling more and more of it. So we'll try to do the best that we absolutely can.
Well, thank you.
So I was wondering, are there any sort of, I know like the Vermont Cheese Council, or California Cheesemakers Guild or Michigan Cheesemakers Guild, some states have organizations for cheesemakers to help make those kind of connections that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Does anything like that exist in New Hampshire?
New Hampshire's been very proactive. I've got a copy of the New Hampshire's own program right in front of me here. Our Commissioner of Agriculture is a lady by the name of Lorraine Stewart Merrill that actually farms on a family farm. And her and her organization has been very supportive. They've done a lot with farm to restaurant, and wine and cheese tours.
Mm-hmm.
We have a little guest book here at the creamery. We have it's open all the time. We have a viewing window into the make room and pictures of the different processes. And it's absolutely fascinating, the people that have found us from all over the country, just through New Hampshire's wine and cheese trails.
Now, where is there a website or anything like that where people could go to learn more about New Hampshire cheese and wine?
Yeah, it's New Hampshire Winery Association .com for the wine side, and New Hampshire Dairy Promo .org for the cheese side.
That is absolutely fantastic. That's so great and so wonderful that your commissioner of agriculture actually has a farm. I mean, that I haven't heard many stories like that. That's pretty great. So that's interesting. So a lot of people have found you guys. A lot of people have sought you out. Do you envision yourselves becoming sort of mentors for any other burgeoning cheesemakers in the state, or is that something you guys would be interested in doing at some point?
Well, one of the things that helped us down the line is the willingness of people to share their thoughts and their processes. So we are trying to give back in the same way that people were kind to us when we were first starting. John Wright at Taylor Farms in Londonderry, Vermont was especially good. I had a lot of good visits with John when we were first starting. We have a common theme that neither one of us wants to milk goats, so we're happy with our dairy cows.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, goats are a whole other can of worms.
That's right.
Well, that's fantastic. So, and then how about your own farm? Do you guys have any plans for succession on your farm?
We don't. We have three grown kids. One of them is piloting helicopters in Afghanistan right now.
Wow, that's amazing.
One of them is a firefighter paramedic in Florida. And my daughter is a backyard poultry expert with Connecticut Central Connecticut Co-op in Connecticut, and that's a really growing industry.
Absolutely, even here in New York, people are keeping chickens.
Yeah, it's a great way to utilize a little bit of open land in a productive way and teach kids about where their food comes from.
Absolutely. Well, it's just a question, you know, it's a question that I've been asking pretty much everybody just because, you know, it's an interesting thing to think, you know, this is kind of been the first wave of this artisan cheese and thinking about where it's going to go in the future.
We hope that the artisan, that our cheese making will create value for our farm. The way the dairy industry is going, heading towards bigger and bigger farms, our farm probably would not be a viable farm going into the future, shipping into the federal order regulated plants.
Mm-hmm.
So this hopefully makes our farm more sustainable operation going into the future than if we were just making and shipping generic milk.
Like you said, yeah, gives you have control over your destiny, and you're making a lot of people happy by making delicious cheese.
You know, that's a big part of it. We've made milk since 1980, and my wife and I have, and you load it onto a stainless steel bulk tank, and it goes down the road, and then you turn around, go back to work on your cows, and it's been gratifying to make a product, see people that like it and appreciate it. It gives us a whole other level of satisfaction in the dairy business.
Well, that's fantastic. I really hope that, you know, that I think having your story out there and having people being able to listen in, you just never know. It's a very inspiring thing. And I thank you so much for taking time out of your Sunday to talk with me. So what do you think? Do you think there's a chance that New Hampshire could change its state motto from like live free or die to eat cheese or die?
I'll call Lorraine Merrill and tell her you suggested
that. Oh, well, we can hope anyways.
Yeah. We just lost a battle this last year. The state drink is now apple cider instead of milk. We have New Hampshire really has a lot of agriculture, but it's a changing agriculture. Dairy is still the number one dollar producer in the state, but the greenhouse business, horticulture, is right tight behind it and growing.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's great. It's great to hear that there's, I don't know, that there's more opportunities, happening around with agriculture in general.
Our area is not unaccustomed to change. In the 1900s, this was a big wool producing area.
Oh.
Our town right now has about 350 residents. At the turn of the century, we had over 1,000.
Wow.
We had 7 operating schools. There, if anybody's traveled through New England, they'll see the stone walls going through all the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at one point, those stone walls were what held sheep in. And we made wool in this area, shipped it into the big woolen mills in the Manchester and Concord area. And our little brook here actually had 3 bobbin mills.
Wow.
On it at one point, that made bobbins to go in be used in the wool business. When the railroads went in the early 1900s and they found they could grow sheep out in the Midwest cheaper than they can here, that industry sort of died within about 5 years.
Wow, that fast.
Yeah. And that's when dairying started to take over in this area and has been the predominant agriculture up until now.
And now you see dairy has largely gone the same way. You know, it's especially with those, mega dairies out west in mm-hmm. California and in the more arid states. It's
yep.
placed a real strain on dairy, where it was traditionally done in
yep.
places that were kind of suitable for small family farms. So, kudos to you guys for bucking the trend and finding a way to make it work. It's just fantastic.
It's still a work in progress, Ann. I'll let you know in 5 years how successful it's been.
Well, I have nothing but faith in you guys. So,
thank you.
Unfortunately, I think we're out of time, and I think who knows, maybe the game has turned around by this point.
Yes,
so we can.
I hope so.
But thank you so much for taking time to enlighten me about the world of cheese and dairy in New Hampshire, and we'll talk with you again real soon.
Thank you, Ann.
Thank you, and stay. Join us next week for another episode of Cutting the Curd on Heritage Radio Network.
She's gone to play for a fool. Yes, it's true, 'cause everybody knows.